Good evening and welcome to our live coverage of the State of the Commonwealth Address here at the State Capitol in Richmond. I'm Bill Miller for WCVE PBS and WHTJ Charlottesville PBS and for WCVE Public Radio. Governor Bob McDonnell will deliver this annual address to a joint session of the 2013 General Assembly in the House of Delegates chamber. The legislative session convened this afternoon and will continue for the next 45 days, the so-called short session of the legislature. Tonight's speech will preview some of the issues to come before this year's General Assembly. Perhaps the most significant proposal from the governor's office is a move to do away with the state gasoline tax and replace the funding by increasing the state sales tax. We also expect to hear public school proposals and about funding for mental health and foster care initiatives. The next voice you hear will be that of House Sergeant-at-Arms Bud Roderick, after which the governor will enter the chamber to the applause and welcome of senators, delegates, and members of his cabinet, and then we'll hear the formal introduction of His Excellency the Governor from Speaker of the House, Bill Howell. Stay tuned.
As Speaker of the House of Delegates and President of this Joint Assembly, it's my pleasure to present to you His Excellency, the Governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Governor Robert Francis McDonnell.
You're here. Okay, you are. Good for you. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you for that warm welcome and welcome back. Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, Justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia, judges of the State Corporation Commission, ladies and gentlemen of the General Assembly, and my fellow Virginians. Tonight, we gather in Mr. Jefferson's Capitol for the annual State of the Commonwealth Address. The Virginia General Assembly has met in this building now for 220 years. The Speaker was a young boy during that first session. Next door, the Executive Mansion is the oldest continuously occupied governor's mansion in all of the nation. This year, we mark its 200th anniversary. And I want to thank the First Lady and all of her team for promoting, for their work in promoting its extraordinary history. Thank you, Maureen, and all my family for being here tonight. Tonight, we convene surrounded by our legislative history that started way back in 1619, ready to do our part to create a more perfect union and to cement a strong foundation for Virginia's future. We must be determined this session to create more jobs and new opportunities for the attainment of the American dream for the people of Virginia. Now, they've sent us here to work together on their behalf and to find solutions for the challenges that they face in their daily lives. They've sent us here to do legislatively what they do personally in their homes, their businesses, their churches, and schools. And that is to act responsibly, to spend wisely, to solve problems, to serve one another, and to make life a little better for those people around them. We don't have to look very far for inspiration from our brave and caring people here in Virginia. On the rain-soaked night of October 30th, as Hurricane Sandy's waters rose swiftly in Accomack County on the eastern shore, Virginia National Guard soldiers trudged through high water to clear a path to transport seven adults and a child out of harm's way. Another rescue required guardsmen to carry a citizen 200 yards through chest-high water to safety. Virginia National Guard personnel rescued 42 citizens during those few days of Hurricane Sandy. Joining us here tonight are Lieutenant James Breckenridge and PFC Norman Malone of the 1173rd Transportation Company, who helped lead some of these rescue missions, along with the Adjutant General of Virginia, Major General Daniel Long. Gentlemen, we salute you for your brave service to Virginia. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to say that with the return of soldiers from Afghanistan this summer, all Virginia National Guard units were home for the Christmas for the first time since September 11, 2001. During these 11 years of the global war on terror, more than 15,000 deployments of National Guard soldiers and airmen were made, mobilized for combat operations and other missions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other countries around the world. Since 9/11, we have lost 10 of our fellow citizens, 10 Virginia Guardmen, to hostile enemy activity. Our National Guard is rightly recognized as among the best in the nation. They've served us all very well. Now, that same heroic service is replicated every day here at home by our men and women in law enforcement. In March of 2001, Buchanan County Sheriff's deputies responded to a suspected robbery only to find a sniper lying in deadly wait. In the shootout that followed, two deputies, Cameron Justice and Billy Stiltner, were killed. Deputy Stiltner had rushed to the scene from his front yard, where he was putting together a new swing set for his two grandchildren. That would be a project that would remain unfinished. Two other deputies, Eric Resnick and Shane Charles, were shot and severely injured in that ambush. Tonight, Deputy Resnick and Deputy Charles, along with Buchanan County Sheriff Ray Foster, are here with us. Gentlemen, we thank you and all of Virginia's brave law enforcement officers for your courage and your commitment to the safety and the freedom of the people of Virginia. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, over the past 3 years, we've worked together for the common good with passion, civility, and a focus on getting results. We've worked hard together to create good jobs and to build a commonwealth of opportunity. In January of 2010, the unemployment rate was 7.3%. Today, it's 5.6%, second lowest east of the Mississippi and the lowest in the Southeast. During that time, Virginia's created 150,500 net new jobs, all in the private, mostly in the private sector. In 2011, we hit our all-time high record for agricultural exports at $2.35 billion, bolstering Virginia's largest industry. Together, we put in place a stronger environment in which the private sector can create good-paying jobs, and Virginia is now outperforming its neighboring states. We've also worked hard together to get our fiscal house in order. 3 years ago, together, we closed a budget shortfall of $6 billion without raising taxes. The results were good. We've had three consecutive budget surpluses now, totaling $1.4 billion. We've more than doubled the rainy day fund. We gave two 3% performance bonuses to our great state employees. Together, we've maintained Virginia's AAA bond rating, while the federal government was losing theirs. We audited multiple state agencies, finding over $1 billion, and bolstered agency efficiency. We eliminated and consolidated dozens of boards and commissions and agencies and programs to save money. We set priorities and cut spending. In this last 3 years, I've recommended to you, and you've accepted, cuts and reallocations of spending of more than $1 billion, and I thank you for that. We've made government live within its means. We put the most new funding into transportation since 1986 and stayed within our 5% self-imposed debt limit at the same time. The 2011 transportation legislation of Speaker Howell jump-started over 900 projects in Virginia. As of August, a record $14 billion in projects are now in procurement or under construction, including mega projects like Dulles Metro Rail and the express lanes on I-95, in Northern Virginia, and the Downtown Midtown Tunnel Project in Hampton Roads. And we just restarted the Amtrak passenger rail service to Norfolk for the first time in 35 years. Last session, we reformed and stabilized the Virginia retirement system that hundreds of thousands of our fellow Virginians rely on for their retirement security. And while California and Illinois and other states are marching towards pension insolvency, we put the most new funding into the system in the history of Virginia. And we've reduced the system's unfunded liabilities by $9 billion by 2031. Moody's praised our reforms as credit positive. And I want to thank Senator Watkins and Senator Howell and Delegate Jones for their work on making that happen last session. Our 2011 landmark top jobs for the 21st century higher education reform legislation has made the college dream more affordable and more accessible for more young people in Virginia. Our bold statutory goal of 100,000 new degrees over the next 15 years, with a focus on the STEM-age degrees, is supported now by more than $350 million of new investment that you agreed to make over the next 3 years. But the best part is these reforms are working. Because over the last 2 years, we've added over 3,800 new slots for undergraduate in-state students. And best of all, tuition increases this year averaged only 4% after a decade of double-digit tuition increases. And that's good news for our young people. Because I'm sure you agree, more diplomas means more jobs. We've increased the percentage of K-12 funding going into the classroom from 62% to 64%, heading to 65%. Graduation rates are up. Dropout rates are now at the lowest level in a very long time and have fallen by more than 25% in the last 5 years. Last session, we ended social promotion to the fourth grade for our young people that can't read well. There are now more STEM teachers and more programs and less bureaucracy in our schools. Now, we're also making good on our progress to clean up the Chesapeake Bay and meeting our goals under the Watershed Implementation Plan that I signed a couple years ago. In 2011, our major wastewater facilities exceeded pollution reduction goals by more than 2,000% for nitrogen and more than 450% for phosphorus. In fact, it was so good that the US EPA's Region 3 award for the biggest loser went to Virginia because we ranked second in the nation for reducing nitrogen pollution in the Chesapeake Bay. Thank you. It's a job well done. But the news is better. The blue crab population is now at a near 20-year high and 66% greater than it was just a year ago. Now, here's the bonus. Tonight, when the speech concludes, I hope you'll join me in a reception featuring Virginia crabs and oysters to literally taste a little bit of our collective success. Our communities are getting safer. Our violent crime rate is now lower than at any time since the early 1960s. It's the lowest in the South, and it's the fifth lowest in the nation. Our property crime rate is the lowest in the South and the eighth lowest nationally. Our strategy has been simple, and it's working. And here's what it is. First, tough punishment and no parole actually works. Our adult recidivism rate has fallen to 26.1%, one of the lowest rates in all of America. We've passed tough new laws to combat domestic abuse, gang violence, drunk driving, internet crimes. And last year, we quietly passed the most significant reforms in over a decade to punish repeat drug dealers and child sex offenders. And I want to thank Senator Mark Obenchain and Delegate Rob Bell for their leadership on those measures. Second, we've dramatically improved our prisoner reentry system because most offenders will be back out on the street. Because what we want is more good citizens and less returning prisoners. So tonight, I'm pleased to announce that our administration has now restored the civil rights of more Virginians than any other administration in the history of Virginia. So here's the point. Here in Virginia, in the cradle of democracy, we enact policies that actually work. In Washington, we see debt, taxes, delays, blame, and dysfunction. But here in Virginia, we see results, solutions, job growth, surpluses, and cooperation. What a difference 90 miles can make. And our work together has led the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to rank Virginia as America's most livable state, and MoneyRates.com to rank Virginia as the best state in which to make a living. And I think you well know that every other major national business publication puts Virginia in the top three best states in which to do business. But while that's all good, as we enter the fourth year of my administration, there are many areas that I believe we must lay a much stronger foundation for the future of our Commonwealth. This session, I'm asking you to work with me to get a few big things done that I believe will create more jobs and more opportunities for our people. When you leave here on time in 45 days, I want to be able to report to our citizens that our kids' schools are on the way to being the most challenging, innovative, accountable, and excellent in all the world. And secondly, that you've made game-changing reforms and investments in transportation. If a young person doesn't graduate from high school, or they do not graduate career-ready or college-ready, then here's the tough news. You failed, I failed, but worst of all, they've failed. All children, regardless of their zip code, must have world-class education opportunities. Because that's the only way we're going to be able to continue to recruit world-class companies like Hilton, or Northrop Grumman, or Bechtel, or Altria, or Intelsat, or some of the others that have come to Virginia, because they all require highly educated, highly motivated employees. But here's the brutal fact today. When it comes to educating our young people, America is slipping. While Virginia schools rate well nationally, according to the Program for International Student Assessment, the United States now ranks 14th in reading, 17th in science, and 25th in mathematics. That's unacceptable. Those are not grades that we want to put on the national refrigerator. The time for action is now. I want to thank Delegate Kirk Cox and Secretary Jim Dyke for chairing the All Students campaign that created a number of proposals that I will announce this year. It starts with the idea that great teachers and great schools make great students and great citizens. A great teacher, like my sister Nancy in Amherst County, if I might say so, makes all the difference in the world, in the life of a young person. So we need to recruit, incentivize, retain, and reward excellent teachers, and then treat them like the professionals that they are. So first, I'm proposing giving teachers their first state-supported pay raise since 2007, and my budget amendments provide over $58 million for a 2% pay raise for all SOQ-funded instructional personnel in Virginia. The Education Fairness Act will streamline the bureaucratic grievance procedure to benefit both teachers and principals. Now, we will extend the probationary period for new teachers from 3 years to 5 years, and require a satisfactory performance rating as demonstrated through the new performance evaluation system to keep that continuing contract. Good teachers will flourish, poor ones will not. I want to thank Majority Leader Tommy Norment and Delegate Dickie Bell for their leadership on that bill this year. Students in Virginia and the U.S. are also falling behind in mastering the STEM-H disciplines that are critical for progress and success in the global economy. So that's why I'm asking you this year to approve funding to support new teachers who teach math and science, technology, or in engineering in our middle and our high schools. Because we need to make sure that the very best teachers in every subject have incentives to excel. So that's why I'm proposing this year $15 million for school districts to reward their high-performing educators. Now, this strategic compensation plan is based on a model that's been developed in the Salem school system here in Virginia. and replicated throughout the country. This program will be implemented through local guidelines that best fit each school division's unique characteristics. And I want to thank Senator Jill Vogel for being the champion of this initiative this year. We need some of our best teachers to locate in our hard-to-staff and underperforming schools. Therefore, I'm proposing legislation to start the successful Teach for America program here in the Commonwealth. Since 1990, Teach for America has placed 28,000 exceptional graduates from top universities into some of the nation's most challenging school systems. All over America, this program works, but not here in Virginia. There are almost 300 Teach for America graduates now that are from Virginia, but I want them to be able to teach right here at their home in the Commonwealth. I'm also asking you to approve a budget amendment to place one reading specialist in each school that scores below 75% in the third grade reading SOL test, and to fully fund the state share of staffing standards for blind and visually impaired students in Virginia once and for all. And I should thank Delegate Bob Brink for giving that idea to me to make sure we could solve this problem. I also propose a new method to obtain waivers from bureaucratic red tape in our school system, putting the algebra readiness and early reading intervention initiatives into the SOQ, and expanding character education and youth development programs in our schools. Now, parents need to know more about what's going on in their kids' school, because that's key to success. They need to know also how well their child's school is actually working. So I believe we should grade schools just like we grade students' tests and papers. So I'm proposing an A through F school ranking scale to empower parents and students and teachers so they can demand excellence in their schools. This new grading transparency will allow us to hold schools more accountable for their performance. Because even in a state like Virginia, that's got a very good public education system, some students are trapped in schools that are underperforming or unaccredited, and that's unacceptable, and it must end now. So I propose that we equip low-performing schools with turnaround specialists and additional resources from the state and the private sector. But if they've got those resources and they haven't improved, then a change has got to be made. We need to have here in Virginia a zero tolerance policy for failing schools. So I'm asking you to approve this year a bold new initiative to establish a statewide opportunity education institution to provide a high quality education alternative for children attending any chronically underperforming school in the elementary or secondary school systems of Virginia. This opportunity education institution will be a new statewide school division to turn around schools that are not performing well. If a school is consistently failing, the opportunity education institution will step in to manage it. But if the school has failed for 2 years or more, the institution can take it over and provide a brand new management system to a broken school. And that will make a change in that school for those young people. I want to thank Senator Ryan McDougal for his leadership on this bill. Because you see, this is a model that has worked nationally. Louisiana and Tennessee have created recovery and achievement districts, and the results are positive. Many of you accompanied our secretary on the trip to Louisiana, and you saw it in person, and you know it works. So for the very small subset of schools that are failing Virginia students, we don't have any other option. Failing schools will not be tolerated in Virginia. Because I can tell you, as the parent of five children that are with us tonight, all of whom have graduated from good Virginia public schools, we must raise the bar and be intolerant of failure. We must also continue to bring more innovation and more choices to the public school system. Excellent education demands having the courage to try new things and to be innovative. Public charter schools have done well nationally to help bring options to our most underserved communities. These charter schools can increase flexibility and innovation and offer a wider range of educational experiences. We've approved new charter schools laws, but we haven't done enough. Here's the proof. Massachusetts has 72 charter schools, Pennsylvania 164, Florida 520, Virginia 4. Because we have one of the weakest charter school laws in all the country. The best public charter school operators in the nation will not come to Virginia because we've made it virtually impossible for them to get started here in our state. So we need new charter school laws that demand excellence, set clear standards, and welcome the best charter schools into our communities. So this session, I'm asking you to join me to pass a constitutional amendment to allow the State Board of Education to authorize charter applications here in our state. And I'm also asking you for support for similar legislation to eliminate the requirement that local school boards who originate a charter school application at the local level must first apply for authorization from the State Board of Election to let the localities have that choice. These two ideas taken together will make it much easier for proven charter schools to open here in Virginia. Better schools mean better jobs and a stronger Virginia. Now, we must also lay the foundation for a stronger Virginia by modernizing our transportation infrastructure system. The nearly $4 billion we directed to transportation in 2011 was the most in the generation. It's a good start, but it's a short-term solution. But you can see the $14 billion in projects that are underway. It's hard to miss all the construction cones and all the construction jobs that have now been created. But the long-term infrastructure solution has not been found yet. Today, the maintenance deficit in transportation is $364 million. That's down from $500 million just a few years ago. But it'll be $500 million or more again in just 5 years. So instead of construction dollars going to build roads, what's happening now is those construction dollars are going to paving and potholes. The gas tax is worth 45% of the purchasing power that it was in 1986, while asphalt's gone up 350%. So we have a math problem. Increasing fuel efficiency from CAFE standards and the rise of alternative fuel vehicles are further chipping away at the purchasing power of the gasoline tax. The Texas Transportation Institute ranked Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia, I don't have to tell many of you, the most congested region in the country in 2011. And Hampton Roads isn't far behind. CNBC dropped us from first to third in the nation in our business rankings, due in large part because of our inadequate transportation funding system. So we must reform and reinvest in transportation infrastructure, or job growth and quality family time will suffer. Therefore, I'm asking you, this session, please do not leave without approving a long-term transportation funding plan for Virginia. And please do not send me a budget that does not include new transportation funding. Because we're out of excuses, and the time to act is now. Yesterday, I announced a plan to invest an additional $3.1 billion in Virginia's transportation networks over the next 5 years, a plan that will provide new funding of about $845 million annually by the year 2018. And I want to thank Speaker Howe, Delegate Hugo, and Senator Newman for taking the lead this session on these initiatives, and others who will join shortly. Now, this plan includes increasing Virginia's transportation share of the existing sales tax and use tax from 0.5% to 0.75%, phased in over the next 5 years. For 2014, this increase amounts to just $49 million. If we cannot annually dedicate just 0.3% of 1% of Virginia's existing revenues to transportation, then we're just not serious about fixing the transportation problem. With a $500 million in surpluses and revenue growth at 3 to 5%, and ongoing saving strategies in place, I would submit to you that it is absolutely wrong to say that we cannot afford a small amount of projected general fund revenue for transportation in our state. I propose dedicating a little over $300 million of that money to build phase two of the Dulles Metro Rail project to reduce the tolls on the Dulles Toll Road. That'll be the start. And thereafter, the rest of these revenues I propose to go to eliminate that maintenance crossover and put more money into construction. The plan I've suggested will also eliminate Virginia's 17.5 cents per gallon tax on gasoline and replace it with the 0.08% increase in the sales and use tax that will not tax gasoline. Now, we'll be the first state in the nation to eliminate the gas tax, which is projected to be in a long-term state of decline. We've been first in a lot of things. This shouldn't bother you. Over the next 5 years, this common sense change will provide over $600 million more than our current gas tax revenues from organic economic growth, not from tax increases. But we'll maintain the tax on diesel fuel because 68% of that fuel is consumed by out-of-state truckers. Trucks comprise 4.2% of the road miles traveled, but cause as much as 80% of our maintenance needs because of their weight. Now, these two policies taken together will generate $500 million per year by FY 2018 and will eliminate the maintenance crossover that we suffer from today. Every new dollar that you invest in maintenance equates to an additional dollar freed up for construction. The total impact of this proposal will lead to $1.8 billion in new construction spending over the next 5 years. Now, demand for new and improved transit and intercity passenger rail also continues to grow here in Virginia. As new services come online, such as the Norfolk Tide and the Dulles Metro Rail project, and the federal mandates of the Passenger Rail Investment Improvement Act are implemented, we must provide additional revenue for these services. So the plan that I proposed includes some other funding mechanisms. First is a $15 increase in the motor vehicle registration fee and a $100 alternative fuel vehicle fee. The registration fee increase will provide over $100 million in additional revenue to fund transit and passenger rail. Now, I'm a strong supporter of alternative fuel vehicles, and I think many of you are as well. Some of you drive them. In fact, I've directed the state through executive order to convert all of our state vehicle fleet to natural gas to save money, help clean the environment. But these vehicles generate very little federal gas tax revenue, and therefore the small fee will help them to pay their share of the funds to maintain and improve our roads. And finally, the plan that I propose to you will dedicate the majority of the anticipated revenues from the expected passage of the Marketplace Fairness or the Marketplace Equity Act pending in Congress to transportation. Now, these are existing revenues that Virginia should already collect under our use tax policies. There's broad bipartisan support for this measure in Congress, and we're very hopeful that we'll pass this year. And so I recommend the remainder of the new revenues from the Marketplace Equity Act to be dedicated to public education and to local governments, consistent with our current sales tax distribution formula. Now listen, I know there are parts of this plan that you'll like. I know there's parts of this plan you won't like. Now that's true of any innovative and comprehensive transportation plan. But we cannot let another session be lost as each member holds out for their view of the perfect plan. The more we sit and debate, the longer Virginians sit and wait. So I expect to sign a transportation funding plan this year, because better transportation means better jobs. Now, we can further strengthen our business climate by passing some common sense tort and business liability reform. This session, you'll consider a number of common sense measures that will ease the burdens on job creators and create more certainty for small businesses in Virginia. I want to thank Speaker Howell for his ongoing leadership on this important initiative. Now, I also ask that you strengthen our commitment to make college more affordable and more accessible by increasing our TAG grant program from $2,800 to $3,100 per student for our Virginia students. This will benefit over 21,000 Virginians going to private colleges in Virginia. And I'm also recommending an additional $31 million for our public colleges and universities, on top of the $350 that you've already dedicated this last couple of years, to continue to add more slots for Virginia in-state students to bring tuition increases down further. I've asked specifically already for our presidents and our boards of visitors members to further increase their operating efficiencies so that in 2013, they will keep increases for in-state students to no more than the Consumer Price Index to help lower student debt here in Virginia. We must prepare now for the unprecedented uncertainty that's being created in Washington, D.C. Our conservative budget forecasts and our focus on cash reserves, I think, do just that. A recent report by the State Budget Crisis Task Force, which looked at how states are positioned for the future, said this about Virginia. Compared to other states, Virginia does not have a structural budget problem. Virginia manages its debt carefully to meet its debt service and retain its AAA bond rating. Virginia's fiscal management and institutions are stronger than most. Now, while that's good, major changes are coming from Washington, D.C., and we know they have to. And they will test us. I want to thank the leadership of Chairman Stosch and Chairman Putney and Senator Colgan for the things they've done to help manage this budget process these last couple of years. But the problem in Washington is real. We are $16 trillion in debt. We added $4 trillion with a vote on New Year's Day. Washington continues to fall deeper into a dysfunctional governing paralysis. There's no bipartisan will to cut spending and to reform entitlements. The fiscal cliff was kicked down the road. Decades of overpromising and overspending has led to an embarrassing situation of fiscal irresponsibility. But the problem is Virginia is uniquely vulnerable to our high because of our high proportion of federal workers and defense spending. You know that. So given the unresolved drama in Washington, I propose a number of prudent budgetary steps this session. First, we should add another $50 million to more than double our rainy day fund from $304 million to nearly $740 million by the end of this fiscal year. I also ask that you bolster our recently created Federal Action Contingency Trust, or FACT Fund, to help immediately address the negative impacts from these anticipated federal actions. The economic downturn, as you know, has also been very difficult for our counties and our cities. Some of the policies we passed up here have made it worse. So that's why this session I'm proposing $45 million in the budget to fully eliminate the awkward policy of localities writing checks back to the state at the end of the fiscal year. The cost of Medicaid in our budget has also grown. In fact, it's grown 1,600% in the last 30 years, according to JLARC, to now consume 21% of the total general fund. Virginia simply cannot afford to become the bank for a federally designed expansion of Medicaid. In 2009, President Obama said this. He said, "As we move forward on health reform, it is not sufficient for us to simply add more people to Medicare or Medicaid to increase coverage in the absence of cost controls and reform. Another way of putting it is we can't simply put more people into a broken system that doesn't work." He was right. The federal government must promptly authorize real, innovative, state-run Medicaid reforms to allow us at the state level to run our programs and manage our programs better. Without dramatic reform, I cannot recommend dramatic expansion in Medicaid. Health benefit exchanges, as designed in the PPACA, I believe are a bad idea. The federal mandates in that bill will increase the cost of insurance for most Virginians and will crowd out other opportunities for markets in the insurance industry. The ongoing failure of the federal government to provide to us clear and cogent guidance and regulation has made the establishment of a successful state-run exchange impossible by October 13. So Virginia will have a federal exchange. I've informed the Obama administration that we will not operate a state-based exchange that gives limited state control, but distinct upside financial risk. It's not good for Virginia. So, but during this process, we will continue to work to ensure that Virginia maintains her traditional regulation of our own insurance market. But we'll continue to press forward with our own health reform. We've allocated $3 million to facilitate bold reforms through the Center for Health Innovation that Dr. Hazel has put together. And soon, our state health insurance plan will offer employees an opportunity to improve their own health at lower costs through a leading consumer-driven health care program that Secretary Hicks-Thomas has put together. Now, I think like all Virginians, Maureen and I were just shocked at the tragic news that came out of Sandy Hook Elementary School a month ago, where 26 people, including 20 precious, beautiful young children, were senselessly killed. You know, while some evil acts can never fully be understood by us, we must be prepared to do everything we can to prevent them. So I'm proposing this session some targeted new mental health funding. I ask you to approve $5 million for specific adult and child crisis services and an additional $1 million for children's mental health services. I'm also proposing $750,000 in the budget to assist in discharging individuals from state hospitals who are ready for that transition home in a secure way. I'm sure you probably agree with me that caring for our fellow Virginians that have mental health issues is an expression of who we are as a people and as a society. I've also established by executive order a school and campus safety task force that I've appointed today to review all security policies in effect in our schools and colleges and to make recommendations to me by January 31st. So I anticipate sending legislation to you this session to be able to improve school and campus safety for our young people. We must also better care for children in our society who are in need of a permanent home with loving parents. Joining us tonight are Jeff and Angie Williams. Jeff and Angie couldn't have children of their own, but they knew that there were wonderful, loving children out there just waiting for a good home with loving parents. So they adopted two foster care children, Sharon, who's now 20, and Leona, who's age 8, and she's with us here tonight. Jeff and Angie, I want to thank you for being model adoptive parents. And Leona, I expect to see you down here delivering your own State of the Commonwealth speech here in about 30 years. So tonight I'm asking you to join with me in ensuring that more little girls like Leona get great parents like Jeff and Angie. We must find good, loving homes for approximately 1,100 foster care children currently waiting adoption. I've included $2.3 million in the budget to provide a $1,000 incentive for up to 1,000 families who adopt foster care children. This will help more young children find the loving homes and the loving parents that they need. I want to thank Secretary Janet Kelly for her leadership in bringing this to my attention. Now, I'm also saying to you today that we owe our children a clean environment and a clean Chesapeake Bay. So I'm proposing a $200 million water quality improvement bond issue that will provide over $100 million for much-needed wastewater treatment plant upgrades and $35 million for urban stormwater projects in multiple municipalities all over the state. The budget surplus will provide an additional $17 million for non-point source pollution reduction projects, like agriculture BMPs that are proven successful around the state. And partly because I'm concerned about the number of oysters that you may consume later tonight, I'm also asking that you approve $2.5 million for the Marine Resources Commission for targeted oyster restoration projects. And I believe this will be the largest single oyster restoration deposit in the history of Virginia. And I want to thank Delegate Ranson and Speaker Howell for bringing this to my attention. Now, while we have significantly improved and fast-tracked the restoration of civil rights process, it's still an executive process. As a nation, and for me as a governor that believes in redemption and second chances and helping people that make mistakes, I think it's time we provide a clear path for willing individuals who want to become productive members of the society once they have served their sentences and have paid their fines and restitution and their debts to society. So I think it's time for Virginia to join most of the other states in the country and make the restoration of civil rights an automatic process for nonviolent offenders in our state. This session, Delegates Greg Habib and Peter Farrell have introduced bills to address this issue, and I urge your support for legislation that creates an automatic restoration of rights process for nonviolent felons. Now, I'm also proposing some new government and regulatory reforms and a reduction in boards, commissions, agencies, and programs again this year, as well as legislation to streamline and simplify the state procurement process to help small business owners succeed. Ladies and gentlemen, we've done an awful lot, I think, working together. We'll do a lot more this session. The unemployment rate's down. More Virginians are going to college and tuition increases have fallen sharply. More than $14 billion in transportation projects are underway. Our pension system is more stable. We've had three straight budget surpluses. All of that, I believe, represents the very best of what we've come to know around here as the Virginia way. We continue to help middle-class families and build a commonwealth of opportunity for all of our people. I hope that's why you're here. Now, I know this is a campaign year. Of course, if you live in Virginia, every year is a campaign year. But what we accomplish in this building for our people is so much more important than any political campaign, yours or mine. If politics trumps effective governing, then we all lose. If we are remembered at all, then we will all be remembered for what we actually get done, not what we promise to do. You remember what our parents taught us? Talk is cheap. Results matter. The Virginia way has been about both fighting civilly for our principles, but also finding the common ground. That's what happens here and has happened here for two centuries in Mr. Jefferson's Capitol. So our challenges this session that I lay out to you are clear. We need to reform and reinvest in transportation infrastructure. This session, let's do it. We need more innovation and accountability in our public school system to promote great teachers and great schools to produce good citizens. This session, let's make it happen. We need further government and budget reforms to strengthen the Commonwealth's fiscal standing in the face of unprecedented uncertainty in Washington. This session, let's enact them. We need more jobs and more access to the great American dream that brought my grandfather here from Ireland 100 years ago. So this session, let's provide it. I'm asking you to join me in continuing the time-honored Virginia way to lay the foundation for Virginia's future. So thank you for your service to the people of Virginia, and may God's blessings remain on this great Commonwealth of Virginia. Thank you. God bless you.
The State of the Commonwealth Address, delivered by Governor Bob McDonnell to a joint session of the Virginia General Assembly, coming to you live from the state capitol in Richmond over WCVE Public Radio and WCVE Richmond PBS and WHTJ Charlottesville PBS. After celebrating successes and achievements in the Commonwealth during his term as governor, Mr. McDonnell turned to proposals for this, his last year in office. The Opportunity Education Institution would provide an alternative to underperforming public schools for Virginia students. He called for improved charter schools laws and discussed his tax plans aimed at funding transportation needs. He sought new mental health funding to prevent violence. Delegate David Toscano of Charlottesville is lined up to give the Democratic Party's response to the governor's address, and we understand that Mr. Toscano is now standing by.
Good evening. I'm David Toscano, the Democratic leader in the Virginia House of Delegates. It is a pleasure to be with you tonight to discuss our future as Virginians and as a Commonwealth. Each year, the first day of our legislative session is a chance to reflect on why the people of Virginia send us to Richmond to represent them. They send us here to Mr. Jefferson's Capitol to make laws to protect the citizens of the Commonwealth and to keep the playing field level for every Virginian. They send us here to solve problems and meet the challenges that threaten to diminish our quality of life. They send us here to make investments that promote economic growth, that fuel the engines of job creation, and prepare the next generation of Virginians to compete in the global economy. They send us here to work together to get things done. And so, as we prepare to begin another session of the General Assembly, it's important to ask, how can we do a better job for the Virginians who we represent? Our Commonwealth is now emerging from a very challenging recession, but too many Virginians still struggle to provide for their families and their future. We need to create prosperity for all Virginians, and Democrats are committed to enacting the initiatives that will unleash a new chapter of economic growth in every corner of this Commonwealth. In his inaugural address, and again this evening, Governor McDonnell spoke about his desire to build a Commonwealth of Opportunity, an important goal. He has suggested time and time again that we be laser-focused on the economy and stay away from the social issues that divide us. We Democrats agree. Yet, when you look at the last several years, we sometimes wonder if our colleagues on the other side of the aisle are listening. Last year, Virginia's legislators became known for the fodder we provided to late-night talk shows as the Republican majority passed several bills that injected government between a woman and her doctor. We cannot afford another session like last year, or we will see Virginia's ability to compete with other states decline. In 2012, Virginia lost its ranking as the best state in the country to do business because we neglected issues like roads and schools in favor of social issues. It's time to focus on what's important. What do we need to create a Commonwealth of Opportunity and to build an economy that works for all Virginians? To build this economy, we need to do three things. We need to invest in education, we need to invest in our people, and we need to invest in transportation. First, education. We cannot have a 21st century economy without a 21st century educational system, from K through 12 to colleges and universities. And recently, we have been neglecting both. In 2009, Virginia was the seventh wealthiest state in the nation. But in that same year, we ranked 38th in the amount of money spent on our students and 31st in teacher salaries. We spend less per student today than we did in 2008. Business demands a workforce prepared for the future. Every child in Virginia, rich or poor, urban or rural, deserves an education that gives them the skills they need to compete in an increasingly global economy. During the last several years, the unfortunate response to our educational challenges from some of our Republican colleagues is to propose further cuts in K through 12 funding while providing more resources for private schools. In the Democratic view, that is the wrong way to go. Every investment in education is a down payment on our growing economy. The second thing we need to do to build this economy is to invest in our people. That is why we are ready to work with the governor and our Republican colleagues to extend health benefits to 400,000 Virginians. A recent study concluded that Medicaid expansion will save taxpayers money, reduce stress on our emergency rooms, and create more than 30,000 new jobs. This is precisely the kind of smart investment that Virginians expect us to make. And finally, building our economy means investing in transportation. Enhancing our transportation network will bring more commerce to Virginia and improve our quality of life. This creates jobs and does so quickly. This starts with protecting the assets we have. We need to put sufficient funds into maintaining our roads and bridges, and we need to keep our ports, one of our greatest assets, under the control of Virginians. But we have needs beyond maintenance. Pure and simple, we need more revenue. As our transportation infrastructure ages, the cost of maintenance is consuming funds that should be going to building new roads, bridges, and rail lines. Unless we address this key issue, Virginia will surely be without sufficient money to build the roads and bridges that we need in order to compete. The failure to invest in our transportation network is making it harder for businesses to get their products to market. It's making it harder for commuters to get to work, and it is making it harder for Virginians to go about their daily activities like taking their kids to school. It costs us money, saps our productivity, and decreases the quality of life of all Virginians. That is why tonight the Democratic legislators of the Virginia General Assembly have a simple message for Governor McDonald and the majority party. Virginians can't afford to wait any longer. There are several innovative ideas for addressing the crisis in transportation, including one recently proposed by the governor. Now is the time to roll up our sleeves and make real, long-lasting investments that do not saddle future generations with debt and do not take money from other critical needs. Great states don't just happen. They are the product of decisions large and small. Over the last several decades, Virginia became the state it is today because its leaders were willing to put partisanship aside for the common good. As a Democratic leader of the House of Delegates, I am hopeful that Virginians can take Governor McDonald and the Republicans at their word that this year's session will be devoted to common sense solutions to our problems. We cannot move forward with crumbling roads and congested infrastructure, overcrowded and underfunded schools, and a system in which too many families are without basic necessities like health insurance. Democrats are ready to work together with the governor and our Republican colleagues to fix our transportation crisis, to improve our schools, and expand access to health insurance to more Virginians. Thank you for listening this evening. Good night, and God bless the Commonwealth of Virginia.
That was the Democratic Party response to the governor's State of the Commonwealth message delivered by Delegate David Toscano of Charlottesville. And that concludes our coverage of tonight's activities on WCVE Richmond PBS and WHTJ Charlottesville PBS and on the stations of WCVE Public Radio. I'm Bill Miller. Thanks for watching and for listening. Good night.